RNZ National, it's Friday afternoon and time for Critter of the Week. Our weekly look at New Zealand's native species with Nicola Tookey from the Department of Conservation. Hello there.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Nicola's pretty much in charge of the South Island for Doc at the moment. It's part of her global domination plan. And I have to ask, sorry to start on an upsetting note, but I saw some news came out of your way about some black-billed gulls that look like they've been attacked by a rock. Was that something that you were involved in? I mean, not the rock attack, obviously, but the aftermath.
Actually, what I can tell you, because it was my staff that have had to deal with this, and it's been deeply upsetting for them.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I heard the news bulletin and I thought of you immediately.
Yeah, so some, I want to say human, but I don't think it counts as a human if you do something like this.
Some animal.
That's actually being disparaging to animals. Mm. Someone took it upon themselves to stone five black-billed gulls to death at the Waimakariri River, which is, you know, I think we just talked about the black-billed gull.
Yeah.
Like a couple of weeks ago for Critter. And we talked about all the amazing, fascinating things about them, the fact that they're nationally critical, they're in the same category as kakapo and maui dolphins, all of that stuff. And wasn't it wonderful the way people were trying to help them? And we'd built rafts in that abandoned building site so the chicks didn't fall off. On and on it went. And so despite all of that, someone just went out and stoned them to death. And our poor rangers that had to go up and collect the bodies of the most threatened gull species of the world are pretty impacted, actually.
Yeah.
It's deeply upsetting.
And that alone would be bad enough. But then you wonder what someone's capable of who can do that to an animal. It's often a sign of terrible behaviour in other parts of their life as well. It's just a real worry.
You're entirely right. So there's, you know, plenty of evidence to show that people who are deliberately and indiscriminately kind of cruel in terms of, you know, that kind of behaviour to animals are also linked to appalling behaviour to humans. So, yeah, basically it's just morally appalling and... apart from the fact that it's very illegal, I don't know what's going on in anybody's head that they think that kind of behaviour is okay.
Well, I hope you actually manage to find out who it was, and then we can all come along to the public stoning. No, I shouldn't say that. I take that back.
Yeah,
but still, I hope the justice is done.
Yeah, justice should be done and within the letter of the law, of course. And, you know, maybe this is a bit of a wake-up call to anybody who, hasn't quite got the memo yet that species in particular is the most threatened species of gull in the world, and we're actually bloody lucky to have them here.
On a positive note, I had such a lovely interview yesterday on the show. I've been sort of putting the word out that I'm keen to hear from farmers. You know, farmers don't usually issue press releases about the cool things that they're doing. So I've said, just send me an email and tell me if you're doing something interesting or cool. And actually people have been dobbing their neighbours in saying, oh, you should talk to this guy. You know, he's quite modest, but he's been up to this. And so yesterday I had a guy called Stu Muir on who he's actually permanently retired 40 hectares of farmlands near the mouth of the Waikato River, and he's restored this native wetland. He's got rid of all these willow trees that were clogging and blocking things up, and it's just come back to life, and suddenly the tui are nesting there, and he was just so matter-of-fact about it. It was really inspiring.
Oh, look, and it's so, you're quite right. Farmers just put their heads down and get on and do, and whether that's their farming business or for those that are interested in conservation, their conservation achievements, and unlike probably government departments, they're unlikely to put out a press release saying, come and have a look at us. I really take my hat off to you for extending that kindness or that, you know, that line of inquiry to the farming community. There are plenty of examples. I've definitely heard of Kim and Stu Muir before in terms of, you know, getting across some of their achievements, and you know, it's not easy to restore a wetland. In fact it's really difficult, and the fact that they have retired that much farmland and B just decided to get stuck into a restoration of a wetland is such a massive thing to do. So high five, virtual high five from me. I think that's amazing, because I know that in terms of the freshwater ecosystem that they are kind of working on now, like I think, you know, when you were chatting to them, they've got whitebait and freshwater mussels. Those are my favourite, kākahi,
Yeah.
you know,
And
and
how about
eels
that belt he was talking about creating from Port Waikato right across the east coast and the Hunua? That sounded pretty exciting too.
Yeah, and I mean that's, if you like, that's the identity of that region, right? It's been a region of amazing wetlands that, you know, let's not forget, are the kidneys of any ecosystem. So do a damn good job at actually, you know, filtering nutrients, keeping your farm wet enough in dry times, and soaking up excess moisture in wet times. They actually provide a really important ecological service that can have great financial benefits in terms of your bottom line. So kudos, Stu Muir and Kim. Well
Mind you,
done.
modesty and privacy can be overrated. It's okay to appear on a billboard as well from time to time, Nicola Tookie. I was walking through central Auckland and I saw this giant face and I thought, I don't know whose face that is, and it's yours, just outside the Air New Zealand building. Getting a bit famous, aren't you?
I actually wasn't aware of the billboard until you texted it to me. Got quite
What?
excited about
Just
that.
the TV
Showed it.
commercial, was it, that you were aware of, or the magazine ads?
There's the. Or if you're travelling out of Auckland Airport at the moment, I haven't, but plenty of my friends have taken great delight in taking selfies. You know, the little corridor that you walk through to get onto the plane. What's it called? It's got a name.
The
Down that way.
gangway,
Yeah.
the gangplank, the
Whatever. The
okay,
plank.
yep.
That tunnel is plastered with images. And so, yeah, much good-natured ribbing of people taking selfies next to my giant head here, there, and everywhere. I did show, some of my doc colleagues your picture that you sent me yesterday, and they all just roared with laughter and said, "You don't know how to set a trap." And when you said giant head, you just made me crack up because years ago when I was involved in making Meet the Locals, so quite some time ago now with TVNZ, they had a banner that used to hang down the atrium of the TVNZ building, like a very enormous banner that had a giant head of me on top of the, I don't know, a weta on my shoulder or something. And after it, you know, all the kind of the show wrapped up, they sent me the banner, and it resides, I think, in our ceiling now. And my husband keeps threatening to throw it away because he hates it, and he just calls it the giant head. And I keep saying, "No, I've got to save it." I don't know why I'm saving it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I think
Save
I
it
need
for
it.
the 40th.
Well, we're well past that now, but thank you.
We could all grab one piece of it and sort of throw you into the air in the middle like they do with kids at mainly music.
Excellent. No, that sounds like a great idea. And in fact, my husband probably has already thrown it away because, yeah, he's highly agnostic about the giant head.
Okay, now let's
So,
go from
yeah.
giant heads to giant beaks. I just saw a beautiful photo of the bar-tailed godwit, and it's real. It's Serrano de Bergerac of the bird world, isn't it?
It really is. You've probably seen bar-tailed godwits. I've certainly seen them feeding away on beaches, sort of up the northeast of Auckland area.
Yeah.
They are beautiful, beautiful birds. But my favourite thing at all about them, I mean, of all about them, is that they are the birds, despite only weighing about the same as, I don't know, a pound of butter, they are the holder of the record of the world's largest non-stop flight. So these are a migratory species of bird. They're the bar-tailed godwit, also known as kuaka to Māori. And they fly from Alaska to New Zealand, and then once they've fed like mad here in New Zealand, they fly back to the Yellow Sea, have a stopover, and then carry on to Alaska and start the whole process again. They breed up in Alaska. They can travel. We tracked several, but the most famous one is a bird called E7, and she left Alaska and travelled nearly 12,000 kilometres in, I think it was about 8 days. So essentially she was travelling at about 80 kilometres an hour for the entire time.
Oh man, that's amazing. Hey, they don't even sort of slow down or get much cruising time. They're just flap, 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 flap
for 12, for the you know, the length of the world, the, you know, around the side of the world. And I think that's incredible. I think they, I heard a scientist talk about them once and describe them as sort of chasing storms. And so they're kind of, and then they fly together. So they line in behind each other and use the kind of slipstream. So much like geese do, I suppose. But it is such an incredible record. There's only one other species of bird that flies further, and that's the Arctic tern, which flies to Antarctica and back again. So from pole to pole, just
oh
about.
Oh my gosh.
I actually, as a complete aside, when I was doing my my research for my science degree, I was down in the Antarctic Peninsula and I saw an Arctic tern down there, and it blew my mind.
There's actually a few species that migrate from Alaska to New Zealand each year.
Yeah, there are. There's actually 35 species that that migrate, and we've talked about some of them before. It looks like when they come back to New Zealand, they're basically sticking to one estuary each time. So, you know, if they like to go to Miranda, then they will go there every year. If they like to go to Christchurch, they'll go there every year. They're only breeding birds return to Alaska. So juveniles fly to New Zealand when they're really young, like 4 months old. But if they're not breeding, they just stick around and hang out in New Zealand. It's just that in Alaska, from a breeding perspective, there's so much food around in that short window when they are over there. And there are no humans around, and there's just like birds, and you know, the ice is melting slightly, so there's invertebrates poking out of the ground everywhere, and it's just so worthwhile from a breeding perspective that's their place. And then it all just gets too cold, so they come to New Zealand, much like us going to the Pacific over winter.
I don't want to anthropomorphise too much, but I wonder if birds feel dread, like as the cold starts coming, go, oh, I'm going to have to do that trip again.
Yeah, probably. The thing about these birds is we deeply care about them in New Zealand. So there's been a play written about them. There's been several books with the word Godwit in the title. And they were of great interest and significance to Māori, who called them, kind of knew them as a mystery bird. And they had a whakatauki that says, Kua kite te kohanga kuaka, which means who has seen the nest of the kuaka? And the answer, obviously, if you were a Māori living in New Zealand at the time, was no one, because you hadn't been to Alaska. And when they, because they are of such significance to all of us, New Zealand has entered into an agreement called the East Asian Australasian Flyway. So the flyway is essentially the Alaska to New Zealand and then back via East Asia. There are seven flyways around the world that have been, you know, identified and recognised as bird flyways. Having a flyway through the middle of East Asia can be quite challenging, because where the birds are stopping in the Yellow Sea is also a place where huge amounts of development and reclamation have occurred across across the estuaries. And so there's been this enormous piece of work from scientists, including one of our scientists here in the Department of Conservation, who work closely with those governments to make sure that we protect pieces of the stopover point, so that those birds can return to New Zealand and be part of our story and go back to Alaska. So that in itself has been quite amazing. So there's 37 partners in that, which includes 18 countries, 6 intergovernmental agencies and 12 international NGOs trying to work together to protect species that basically don't have a border. Easy to protect species that live within the realms of your own country. You just make some laws. But trying to apply that across countries, across the world, is incredibly complex and nuanced, and I'm so proud of the people involved at this end with that.
Would I be right in thinking that North Korea was one of the signatories to that partnership? I know they've got quite an important part in sort of the bird migration story.
Yes, and one of the great achievements of some of the New Zealand participants in the East Asian Australasian Flyway is that they actually travelled to North Korea and kind of began that relationship so that this could occur, which is pretty amazing. In fact, I think I think for some of these birds, I think that essentially they might even be through the DMZ. I'd have to go back and check on that one. A pretty neat story because we've also had some dignitaries come out from China, like politicians. We've certainly had our Prime Minister and our Minister of Conservation involved in, the protection that goes on in terms of that East Asian Australasian flyway. So even if we all have our political differences, when it comes to the nature, and in this case the birds, there's something about them that we all love. And so that makes us want to work together on that particular thing, even if we can't agree on the other thing.
I'm looking at the list. It's a great list of countries: North Korea, South Korea, Mongolia, Myanmar, and others, and of course Australia and New Zealand as well. Could I ask you, if it's possible, for you to rate the attractiveness of the bar-tailed godwit on a scale of 1 to 10?
Sure. They are very attractive, particularly in their breeding plumage. So when they're breeding, they go from being this sort of grey-brown, long-legged bird with a, as you say, the Cyrano de Bergerac, a big long beak like a kiwi, to this sort of chestnut, like bright, deep, chestnutty red, at which point they look rather beautiful. And I almost got stuck in the mud the last time I was up in Auckland and I came across some godwits because I wanted to go out and see them and then realised that my jandals were getting completely quagmired. So I would give them I'm going to give them at least a 7.5.
Nicola Tookie from the Department of Conservation, thanks so much. People can check out a photo of the bar-tailed godwit online, rnz.co.nz/Jessie. And Nicola, catch you next week.
Thanks, Jessie.